हरि ओ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 63. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates, "Certainly you have stolen him." Bata indicates lamentation. Vishnu Purana says, "Aho gopi janasyasya darshayitva maha indim." Ukritanyadya netrani vidhatra karunatmana. Having shown the one great treasure to the gopis, the merciful Creator has torn out their eyes today. This is like a person who does not know sin and piety, who takes back what he has given. Though you are omniscient, you act like a fool. Since you end up by giving us the greatest suffering, this is more sinful than doing an act in ignorance. How did you steal our eyes? By those eyes we saw the pinnacle of all beauty in your creation, in one particle of Krishna. We saw in a portion of the ocean of beauty of his eyes, and faced the perfection of the beauty of the lotus and moon. Since our eyes have no taste for any other object, by taking him, you have taken our eyes as well. Madhudvisa, killer of sweetness. Wow. Here indicates that his sweetness makes all sweetnesses derived from material objects or liberation useless. He is endowed with all qualities since he is like Narayana. Or he takes away, dveshti, the sweetness of liberation and material enjoyment, madhu, from his devotees. Right, so yes, by that surrender to Krishna, then the taste for material enjoyment then goes away, and then one doesn't have this anymore. The gopis continued, "Alas, Nanda's son, who breaks loving relationships in a second, will not even look directly at us. Forcibly brought under his control, we abandon our homes, relatives, children, and husbands just to serve him, but he is always looking for new lovers." Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, "The object of our love, the cause of our life, Krishna, is indifferent to us. Why then should we criticize the Creator?" Right? So you're asking about that. So they're getting to it. They get slowly, slowly, slowly. Because you start off with all this and that and this and that, and then finally at the end it's you. Like that. There is a pattern. Yes. How has he broken this very strong bond of love? Friendship broken in an instant cannot be real friendship. Though he has brought us to the point of death, he does not even look at us. He has decided to go to Mathura for his own happiness. Even if we should cry and eventually die, giving up house, husband, and son, we became his servants. In order to become his servants, we gave up all these things. But now he is giving us up and going away. Why? Because he has new lovers. Because we have become old lovers. He is giving us up and going away. Thus, in this life, we achieve nothing, having left our husbands and Krishna having left us. And in next life, also, since we have broken laws of Dharma. Right? So they're feeling that they'll have nothing because they gave up the laws of Dharma to please Krishna, and but Krishna having given them up, then they feel that they're left with nothing. Right? Because in this life they don't have anything, and next life they won't have anything. The gopis continued. The dawn following this night will certainly be auspicious for the women of Mathura. All their hopes will now be fulfilled. For as the Lord of Raja enters their city, they will be able to drink from his face the nectar of the smile emanating from the corners of his eyes. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, in 5 verses the gopis speak in envy. Long-held hopes of the women of Mathura, or the blessings of the Brahmins, have now borne fruit. He should be seen by the people of Raja, Rajaspatehe, but he will never enter into the city.
He will enter.
He should be seen by the people of Raja, but he will enter into the city. Okay. The gopis continued. O gopis, although our Mukunda is intelligent and very obedient to his parents, once he has fallen under the spell of the honey-sweet words of the women of Mathura and been enchanted by their alluring, shy smiles, how will he ever return to us unsophisticated village girls? Because that in the city, then, you know, the sophistication element then becomes so prominent. And so, how you say, in other words, there are... less ways that, you know, it means the subtleties, that the idea is that there's less ways of saying yes or no in the village than there is in the city.
You are there feeling the separation more because, you know, now the competitors are there, you know, the Mathura women, that's...
That may be, but it's just part of the consideration of the separation. Is that then they're worried that this separation will become lengthened because of the him. If he just goes to Mathura for the work that's there to pay the tax and comes back, then that's bad. But if he goes there and gets attracted by the girls that are there because they're so much more sophisticated and everything like that, then they're worried that then he may not come back as soon. So it's all just the aspects of the continuation of that feeling of separation and how the, you know, just whatever is done must be brought to a greater and greater position of intensity. See, is that one may ask, well, why does Krishna do all these things to the gopi to increase that love for them and increase the intensity? But even on their own, they're going to do that anyway. That's just the feminine nature. You start off with a, you know, how you say, a molehill, and you end up with Mount Meru. And that's all within, how you say, 2.9 seconds, you know, so, how you say, or even less, 2.6, so faster than a Ferrari. They just take it from one to the other like that, because of the intensity, the fullness. So that's the whole point, rasa. It's just about increasing the rasa. So because of their attachment to Krishna, they just keep increasing their attachment. So the separation, then they think about how they're with him, then that creates more separation, they think more of him than they're with him. So that's the aspect of the bhav, him there, I think, I'm not sure what the name is, bhava prakash or bhava something. It's a form of Krishna that's in Vrindavan that he never leaves. Because at any moment they can think of him and feel his presence. But still, there'll be that aspect of separation. So it'll just keep nourishing each other.
That is the same as Sphurti. Because Sphurti is also the same thing, like, you know, they feel him manifest.
I'm not sure. Like that. I forget who mentions it. You know? I'm not sure who mentions that point. Because the point is, he never leaves Vrindavan means he never leaves, his mood never leaves Vrindavan. Right? So it's there. Others outside may appreciate it by appreciating his pastimes with the Brajabasis. But his mood doesn't go out. So it's not manifest outside of there. Mm-hmm. It's only manifest in Braj, though it can be appreciated by the Brajabasis and anyone outside. Yeah. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, he will completely forget everything, Brahman, because of the women of Mathura. Though he is obedient to his parents, Paravan, he will fall under their control, Grihita Chitaha. Or because he falls under their control, Grihita Chitaha, he will be dependent on those women, Paravan. Right, so either way, that's the whole point, is all these things. He speaks in these aspects of double meanings, and that brings out the flavor, because it's saying one thing, but it can mean another, right? So that's always an interesting thing. So also how they speak, it can mean these different things. That he's, you know, so nice, you know, he's controlled by his parents and all that, then that's very nice. But then he bring out the other side, where he can be controlled by the women of Mathura. And so that's not a good one, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. If Govinda goes to Mathura, why will he return to Gokula? He will drink the honey of the city's women's arts and speech with his ears. How will his heart, relishing their words and gestures, taking shelter of them, return to rustic gopis? This village boy will be bound by the change of their flirting. But what logic will he by what logic will he return to you women of Gokula? Vishnu Purana. Right? So there it's describing this, because it means these pastimes are described in all the Puranas, but we see that here is that what's being brought out in the Bhagavatam, then other Puranas, when they're telling, they maybe have another verse that's different or something, or explain the same thing, but they're bringing out a different aspect. And so then by this, then you can get these different explanations. Right? The gopis continued, when the Dasarhas, Bojas, Andakas, Vrishnis, and Satvatas see the son of Devaki in Mathura, they will certainly enjoy a great festival for their eyes, as will all those who see him traveling along the road to the city. Yeah, there's more of them. Because it seems that there's so many different groups that they don't mention all of them at once.
These are the major ones.
Yes, but sometimes they mention, like here, this time they mention Vrishnis, sometimes they don't. The last time they didn't mention the Vrishnis, like that. Satvatas they mentioned. With Akrura, like that. When they see the son of Devaki in Mathura, they will certainly enjoy a great festival for their eyes, as will all those who see him traveling along the road to the city. After all, he is the darling of the goddess of fortune and the reservoir of all transcendental qualities. Footnote 20. Fortunate are the people on the path who see Krishna without obstruction. Their hairs stand on end. There will be great joy for the eyes of Mathura citizens when they see his limbs. What dream have I seen? With wide eyes they will see him unobstructed with their fortunate eyes. Vishnu Purana. He who is doing this merciless deed should not be called Akrura. He is so extremely cruel that without even trying to console the sorrowful residents of Braja, he is taking away Krishna, who is more dear to us than life itself. Right? So we see here is that aspect. If just all the Brajbasis are going to Mathura to pay their tax, then having gone there, then you know they'll do their business, they'll come back. But because someone's been sent to take him there, then there's the chance he may get more involved there. You understand? Let's see, yes.
We see here that Akrura is doing his duty. He's not against gopis in particular.
No.
But still they're very upset with him.
Because he's pro-Mathura. He's pro-Mathura. They're pro-Braja, he's pro-Mathura, so...
There's conflict of interest.
Yes, yes. You know. Of course we know the team Real Braja will come out on top, but...
Then we'll also have sometimes an experience that while performing our service, some devotees are upset. So how should we... consider it or react or...
Well, it means if it's our duty, we're supposed to do it, then that has to be continued. But then we can look at it, is there some way What is bothering is the service itself, the attitude, the method used or that, and then see if there is something that can be adjusted so we can accomplish the purpose of our duty at the same time as in such a way that the others aren't disturbed. And if they're going to get disturbed anyway because they don't either appreciate that service or something like that, then what can you do? You keep a humble attitude in the nicest mood possible, but you have to do your service. So if it's something authorized, something has to be done, then, it's like preaching. Materialists don't appreciate preaching, right? Nard Muni gives that for the materialist, then there's a window of opportunity when so much ghee goes on the fire that the fire goes out. And so there's a window there when you can convince them of Krishna consciousness and get them practicing Krishna consciousness. Then in that state, then the taste of Krishna consciousness, then comparing that to the material, they'll be able to see the difference. While if you don't catch that window and the fire starts up again, because that's the desire, is to taste something, then at that point they won't be able to tell the difference, or they don't see the superiority, because that one is Krishna consciousness seems restricted, while what they're doing seems unrestricted, and so due to ignorance they can't actually tell what's what. So then for the materialist, most of them aren't interested in that you came and talked to them about a book, or that you did Hari Nam or this or that. So, that you're dressed as a devotee and that. Like once I had, someone on the plane come and sit. There was an empty seat next to me. Came and sat down there just on their own. They just came and just sat there. And then they started to discuss that, okay, you have your religion and that. That's cool and all that, but why do you have to show it? Like that, Exactly opposite of the Hasids, right? You have a religion, then people should know what it is, because then we can tell whether, you're one of us or one of them. And if you're one of them, then we can throw rocks. But if you're one of us, then we know to leave you alone. But the point is, he had the opposite. Why are you showing it? In everybody's face, as if this, that, blah, blah, blah. So then, probably because he had nothing else to do. He was flying to Calcutta. He had a business connection there, and so then we talked for the whole 3-hour flight or whatever it was. So then by the end of it, he was quite comfortable and happy and this and that after everything had been explained. But it did take 3 hours. Right? And I think it's one of those things, he regularly flies, so he's bored of the flight, so that, go harass the Hari, Let's see what taste we get out of that, So he was quite happy. Like that, so then it's all. So, therefore, the duties that have to be done must be done. That's the whole point. Otherwise, then we just do what's speculative. So that's why you see is, okay, if people say, oh, no, but we shouldn't do this, it bothers people. But the point is what doesn't bother everybody? They can't stand themselves, let alone anyone else. So you can't please the materialists. So that's why then you expose them to the medicine of the holy name and the process of devotional service. And then by that exposure to the medicine, it has a small effect. And then by that slight bit of curing of their disease, they may be able to appreciate, what's there. But if not, then you just keep applying it until at some point it does. So if the disease is more, acute or chronic, then it won't work for a while. But as the Agata Sukriti builds up, then it'll start to work. So that's why even though some may complain, but we're bothering everybody, and then we're just turning them off, and how will they come to Krishna consciousness? But if they don't know about us, how will they come to Krishna consciousness? So that's the whole thing, you give the medicine to the kid, he won't like the medicine, so therefore he won't take any medicine, but the point is no, you just keep, and then at one point they get better. It's just the way it works. because the only thing the Karmi wants is that if you could come and hand him a briefcase that's got, you know, $1 million in it, then they might go, wow, this is nice, I like this, you guys are okay, you know. You know, and just by the way, don't mind me asking, but what's with the bed sheets, you know, so it's just, they're not going to like. Right? Or I had one guy, I think it was, you know where you have the runners? You know, any flight that directly comes into, like, Calcutta, then you have the runners, you know, runners, huh? No, runners. No one knows the runners.
It's a track number, that's like, you
know. No. It's the guys that they pick up from Newmarket, you know, all the Jakawalas, and, you know, the guys that carry the bags, because they come out here. Doti, change money. Those guys? Right? Now we know who we're talking about? Okay. Then they get them all together, 20 of them. Right? It's always got to be in 20, I'm not sure why. Then they take them to, you know, Bangkok or Singapore or Kuala Lumpur or, you know, Hong Kong or someplace where there's a direct flight to Calcutta. Right? Then they take them over there and take them out to, you know, this and that, put them up in a, you know, a cheap hotel, which is way better than what they're used to. And, you know, a little this and that, eating, see a few sights. And so then they're happy, right? Then they come back. What do they come back? So they go in their, whatever they're wearing, you know, their funny pants and flip-flops and all that. They come back and all, you know, sports stuff, Nike stuff, shoe, fancy shoes, everything like that. Whatever you can wear. Whatever they got their bag, whatever you can legally carry back into India, you know, X amount of, you know, alcohol and cigarettes and anything else, you know, electronic goods, whatever the customs will allow you, you know, not one thing less, right? Then they fly back. They're the guys that are yelling, screaming, getting up, doing everything that the stewardess says not to, always demanding things on the flight because they paid for the ticket, you know, we owe us, like that. Now do we know who we're talking about? Okay, we've all seen them, right? Yeah. Like if anywhere to Singapore, you won't see them, but Singapore to Calcutta, you'll see them. Because that they only go that far, like that. So then those are the, I don't know, maybe they have a different name now, but when it started back in the, I think the 90s or something, they were called the runners, like that. So you always see them. They're a little bit more sophisticated now. They don't look as, I think they've moved up a little bit on them, but means their payment is they get a few day vacation, they get to go somewhere like that, so that they don't get, but everything else that comes back, it's all brand new. And so you see, they all have the same bag, they all have the same carry, you know, the duty free bag, they all have, everybody has exactly the same. That's how you know. And there's one guy there, you know how you say, pudgy guy that holds all the passports and has, you know, half a brain or something, and then he herds them through and everything like that. What? No, haven't seen all this. We've seen all this. Okay.
Especially if you fly from Thailand.
Huh? Especially from Thailand. And so amongst the airlines, amongst the stewards and stewardesses, those are the worst flights. And so because they have to be done, if you're new, you know, that's where you go. And so after a while, then you can move up and move to some other flight. And then, yeah, so they hate that, those flights. And now how we got into that, what that was the example for, it was trying to explain something. No? Merciless, cruel, more too. Yeah.
About the duties we were speaking about.
The duties. Oh, yes. But it was about, yeah, doing your duties and annoying people. So the materialist doesn't care less who they annoy as long as they get the benefit. So, and they're not going to allow anybody else to do any, they don't want anyone else to annoy them, they just want their benefit. So there's nothing you can do to please them. So that's the whole thing, is that this idea that we can please the karmis, and because we please the karmis, now they'll like the devotees, because they like the devotees, now they become devotees, that's not very developed. Okay, someone that you have to deal with, let's say like your parents, They don't like devotees. They don't that. But if you deal nicely, then they start to like you. Then that breaks it down. But when you're out on the street and all that, you behave nicely. That's the culture. But it doesn't mean that we don't do our duties. We mean do our duties nicely. Maybe in the past, people have not done them nicely. Like I've heard of Harinam parties going into these big department stores, you know, doing kirtan and, you know, going up down the escalators and really loud, coming up to people and yelling in their faces because they're, you know, demons and stuff like that. And so, you know, they get themselves tossed out and, you know, stuff like that. But you can do things nicely. Right? But nice doesn't mean it can't be. We have this idea, we may have this idea that nice means it's not Krishna conscious. I mean, Krishna conscious is not nice. So, yeah. So the point is Krishna is, and the gopis and everybody else, they're so nice and they're Krishna conscious. So you can be nice and be Krishna conscious. Right? Okay. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, that person, Asau, whom they cannot even mention because of his cruelty, is taking Krishna. So this thing of he whose name cannot be said is an old thing, right? Like that. So it starts with, this is the first time we've heard that, you know, so it starts with the gopis. Right? Or that person who we can see over there is taking Krishna. That person over there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one. He does not even console the people by saying, I am taking him and will bring him back to you. No, he's just there ready to take him. He's not saying he's bringing back. Because in his mind, he's not talking about bringing back. That's the point. Is he's talking about him being the medium for him, Krishna transferring pastimes. Right? So then the Braj pastimes where he's there, you know, daily interacting will go. Now he'll be there daily interacting by the remembrance of him. Right? So it'll be ever new, ever fresh. But he'll move to Mathura for that. So he's not saying, I'm taking him, don't worry, we'll be back, you know, we're just going for this festival, we'll be back in this much time. He's not saying anything. He's just sitting there ready to drive the chariot. Right? He should at least give some general consolation to the people. Janam, what to speak of consoling us weak women? The addition of Su, very in Su Dukitam, indicates that very soon he will be responsible for death of women. Thus, he is very cruel. So Dukkha is then you're going to be, your difficulty in that. So Su Dukita then means very difficult. So in this case, then it means that Sanchari Bhava of death, right? The gopis continued. Hard-hearted Krishna has already mounted the chariot, and now the foolish cowherds are hurrying after him in their bullock carts. Even the elders are saying nothing to stop him. Today, fate is working against us. The BBT purport states, Srila Sridhar Swami reveals that the gopis thought, these foolish cowherd men and elders are not even trying to stop Krishna. Don't they realize they are committing suicide? They are helping Krishna go to Mathura. But they will have to come back to Vrindavan and will certainly die in his absence. The whole world has become nonsensical. Because they're going to have to come back because this is their place. But the gopis are worried Krishna will stay there. Right? Because they have nothing to do there. They'll come back. But Krishna could get involved with the women of Mathura. And so then he may not be inclined to come back. So he's saying these elders, they don't see that. Right? Only the gopis see that. So Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the gopis went on to say, the most astonishing feature is that Krishna, the son of Nanda, without consideration, has already seated himself on the chariot. From this it appears that Krishna is not very intelligent. Yet he may be very intelligent, but he is not very merciful. So he's not very intelligent. Why would he do this and go away, leave us, this is all good. But he might be intelligent, but if he is intelligent, then he's not merciful. Not only Krishna, but all the cowherd men are so callous that they are already yoking the bulls and calves for the journey to Mathura. The elderly persons in Vrindavan are also merciless. They do not take our plight into consideration and stop Krishna's journey to Mathura. Even the demigods are very unkind to us. They are not impeding his going to Mathura. The gopis prayed to the demigods to create some natural disturbance, such as a hurricane, storm, or heavy rainfall, so that Krishna could not go to Mathura. Right. So, The gopis continued, "Let us directly approach Madhava and stop him from going. What can our family elders and other relatives do to us? Now that fate is separating us from Mukunda, our hearts are already wretched, for we cannot bear to give up his association even for a fraction of a second." The BBT purport states, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that the gopis thought, "Let us go right up to Krishna and pull at his clothes and hands and insist that he get down from his chariot and stay here with us. We will tell him, don't bring upon yourself the sinful reaction of murdering so many women." "But if we do that," said other gopis, "our relatives and the village elders will discover our secret love for Krishna and abandon us." Then the others say, "But what can they do to us?" "Yes, our lives are already wretched now that Krishna's leaving. We have nothing to lose." Right? Because if he goes, they may have that secure position at home, but they lose everything because Krishna is everything for them. And then if they get him to stay, then they may have a more difficult situation at home, but at least Krishna is around so that maybe something can be worked out. "That's right. We will remain in Vrindavan forest just like presiding goddesses. And then we can fulfill our true desire to stay with Krishna in the forest. As Krishna comes to the forest, then they'll just live in the forest. And then Krishna can come out and visit them at night in the forest. So they won't have that security of the home and village during the day, but then they'll just live in like the goddesses do in the forest. You know, they're there, they're happy, so why won't they be happy?" "Yes, but even if the elders and our relatives punish us by beating us or locking us up, we can still live happily with the knowledge that Krishna is residing in our village. Some of our girlfriends who are not imprisoned will cleverly find a way to bring us the remnants of Krishna's food. And then we can remain alive. But if Krishna is not stopped, we will certainly die." The gopis continued, "When he brought us to the assembly of the Rasa dance, where we enjoyed his affectionate and charming smiles, his delightful secret talks, his playful glances, and his embraces, we passed many nights as if they were a single moment. O gopis, how can we possibly cross over the insurmountable darkness of his absence?" Footnote 21. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 29 to Bhagavad Arkamrita chapter 6, entitled "Tasting the Sublime Nature of Relationships with the Lord," Bhagavat Rasa Tattvam, which is in the Sambandha section of the Thakur's book. So, this aspect of where a kalpa seems like a moment, or then this impending separation, a moment seems like a kalpa. These are all symptoms of ecstasy, of prema. Right? So that's the aspect that's being brought out, is that one night of Brahma seemed like a moment, and then he spent so many nights with them, but it all still seemed just like a moment. So it doesn't matter how much is there, it'll just seem like a moment. Yes?
Somehow tasting rasa seems to connect more with Abhideya and Prayojana part, not with the Sambandha.
No, but here it's explaining what is that taste. So in other words, in Sambandha, you'll explain that this point of a moment seems like 12 years or more. So that's explained in the Sambandha section, that's the taste. It's like in the Nectar of Devotion, the first five chapters, that's Rupa Goswami calls that Samanya Bhakti.
Yeah.
So that's explaining all the principle, the tattvas of all these different things. Then from the sixth chapter, he'll be describing Abhideya. Right, so all the knowledge of Abhideya is then described in those first five chapters. So, because in there they start off, right, the first thing they start off talking about bhava and the six symptoms of bhava and all these things like that. And so they're establishing what is the devotional mood, what's the symptoms, what's the activities. And then they explain, you know, all the different things of how there's the sadhakas, how there's the spontaneous devotional service, all these different things are explained. So that's all Sambandhika. Yes?
So it seems that most of devotees' study is within the section of Sambandha, but where's the tasting happening?
By process of engaging in devotional service, the heart becomes purified, one becomes attracted to Krishna, then there's tasting. So in other words, how are they going to get to the tasting? Through sadhana. And that sadhana will be based on seeing that they're using the proper knowledge, proper recommendations, and applying it with the proper attitude in the performance of the devotional service. And because that's being done, it's connected to Krishna, there will be a taste. But when it comes, when the heart becomes purified enough, then there is a section of development called taste. There's always a taste, otherwise one wouldn't be involved in devotional service. But there comes a point where then the taste becomes the prominent feature. But we see that's after nishta. So in other words, having come to that point of 75% have removed the anartas, only 25 are left, that situates you nicely in nishta. Right? So if we take it, that, you know, so, but at some point it becomes more. There's more purity. Then that brings about taste. Right? Because it's just like the example of that Rupa Goswami gives of when someone has jaundice. So rock candy is the sweetest form of sugar. Right? Because it doesn't have that kind of heavy, like fiery element that sugar has. It's clean. It's cooling. It's a more refined aspect of sweetness. So, but someone with jaundice, it'll taste bitter, even though it's not bitter. But one may say it's bitter. I shouldn't take this. But it's only by taking it that you get rid of the disease. And then as it goes down, then it starts to come to the point where it's neutral. Right? So then you eat a sweet, it doesn't taste sweet, but it doesn't taste bitter. Then if you keep taking the rock candy, then at some point you'll just start to get that point where it starts to taste sweet. Right? And then if you keep going, then it gets to the point where it has that full Bengali sweetness. Yes.
So can we say that the performance of 9 devotional practices could happen in Sambandha, Videya, or Prayojana?
Yeah, it means they're happening in all. It's just which is because Mother Yashoda has a relationship with Krishna, right, and the parental Ras, and she has an attitude of the that Vatsalya Rati. So you can say that's the relationship, that's the attitude, you know, to please Krishna. If you're looking at that, because what's happening is Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana can be applied within each of the three.
Yeah.
So then one may be more situated in Sambandha, and you're performing these, and then with an Abhideya, like this. So they all three will be there. Otherwise, if there's no taste, then there's no performance in devotional service. Why is one interested or inclined without that knowledge, without that activity, without the results, one wouldn't be inclined, but one is inclined. Why? Because there is a taste. But it may be very small compared to this ocean of taste that the residents of Braj are giving, but one candle has more light than a whole stadium of darkness. You know, so all the darkness of the material world, or all the taste of the material world, is just ignorance, it's darkness. So one candle or one drop of taste of devotional service is greater. And if we look at it and compare it without it, you know, just intellectually, you can see the difference. But due to attachment, we attribute that, no, this should make us happy, a particular material activity. So we'll attribute to it more than it actually is. So as long as we look at it with a material view, then we'll say it gives us happiness when it doesn't and never has and never will. Because the Bhaktivinoda, of course, pointed out, is because you can't actually be happy here, then we make the compromise of saying, if I get rid of the pain, I'll be happy. So that's why the difficulty comes up is all the questions about Vipralamba and all these things, because it appears to be pain. And our definition of happiness is removal of pain. So therefore, how is it they're tasting this pain, but it's actually ecstasy? Because here, pain is not. Right? Unless you're one of those no pain, no gain wallers and like that, and feel the burn and all that kind of stuff. But then, you know, does that make sense? Then they feel the pain of sitting on the couch, and you know, and so then sitting there, then they feel that they missed out on the day, so then they go and run up down the stairs, you know, a few times, and then they feel good. Does that make sense? So that's what's getting in the way of this. How is this happening? Why is Krishna allowing this? Why does he have to use this method? Because we have the idea that that happiness means no pain, but actually happiness is something else. So we can taste material consciousness whether there's happiness or pain. So I mean whether there's pain or the removal of the pain, and we can still taste material taste, because the material pain, then that's called karma, and removal of the material pain, that's called jnana, right? So then the short-term removal is karma. That's what you're trying to do. The longer term, that is jnana. But in both cases, you're trying to remove the pain. Does that make sense? So then we're not used to these higher concepts, this higher understanding, higher taste. But by performing the devotional activity, then the taste is coming. So that little bit of taste that's there is actually there. But we can overwhelm it with our taste for removing pain. Right? So the taste of devotional service is more than the difficulty we're experiencing, because it's all illusion anyway. It's not real. It's what the situation is producing in interaction with the gross and subtle elements. But the soul is not that. So therefore, there is actually no pain for the soul, or no happiness for the soul from the material. But we identify with it, so we'll say that there is. So to that degree, we're saying. To that degree, we're not appreciating the taste of devotional service. Does that make sense? So that's why we might think that, well, when I first started, you know, it was so much more exciting, there was so much more happening, there's so much more, you know, happiness in Krishna consciousness, now there's less. No, it's just that at that time, by comparing it to what was there and what you were gaining, then it was such a great, you know, between, you know, literally between, what is it, dark and light, or day and night, you know. So then we could appreciate it. But with time, we become conditioned by the mode of goodness. So we're performing the right activities, the pains are not so bad, and so we don't see that actually the taste we're getting in devotional service is greater. Just we're not in comparing it that, you know, the material world is not so bad, so so if we look at removal of pain as happiness, then, you know, then that aspect is there, so the material world is not so bad, so therefore then what am I gaining? You understand? But it's just a matter of appreciation of actually what's devotional service and the glory of it. Then that same position and taste comes back, because that's the nature of the soul. You know, does that make sense? Just like children, they're naturally like happy and like that, positive, idyllic, all these things. It's only by associating with pessimistic adults, atheistic adults, that they gain those qualities. Otherwise, they go on in their, you know, how they're doing things. Does that make sense? So no. Yeah. So then we, you know, think it's more sophisticated to do things in a way that's seemingly more real. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Can we say that the prayojana for us today, when we achieve it, it shifts back to sambandha, and then we have to put another prayojana to move forward, otherwise we become complacent and feel no taste?
Yes, you could say. But what that's solved by the prayojana is always pleasing Krishna. So the results one's gotten from pleasing Krishna, now that adds to the sambandha, or the field of activities that you work within. So now you take that field again and use it to please Krishna. So then there's no conflict in that. So if we always keep Krishna there, then there's no problem. But like you're saying, is that we're used to having a goal, and then when we, you know, and that goal is to remove a pain from not having that goal. But once we get that goal and it moves back to Sambandha, it's no more of a taste for us. Then we have to set a new goal. But the point is the goal should lead to Krishna. So either it's directly surrender to Krishna and doing things just to please Krishna, or whatever one's doing, then you see it how it will come to the point of being something to offer to Krishna and please Krishna. So then, you know, serving pleasure of Krishna becomes the ultimate goal, not necessarily the immediate goal. Right? Or you're doing a service to please Krishna, but then there's the realizing the results of the secondary endeavor for the purpose of the primary endeavor to please Krishna. But if as long as you see the primary and secondary in its proper form, you know, proportion, then one doesn't get distracted. The mind remains clear, right? Consciousness is clear. But if one gets distracted, then the consciousness getting hazy, then one may think that attaining the secondary is actually a real goal in itself. Like that. Rather than it's something to help in or to express one's devotion to Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, though they were eager to stop him, seeing the impenetrable crowd of people, they could not find a means to approach him. In fear they speak. Though they speak of the rasa dance, other pastimes are also included. Valgu mantra means sweet messages secretly conveyed through hints. Right? Because it's that the message, because their interaction, anything that they've had, all the interactions that they remember, then when it's with everybody else, it's all secret. It's not direct, right? Because you can't use direct in the greater social context. Does that make sense? The gopis can. Just as many nights passed in a moment in the happiness of the rasa dance, in the sorrow of separation, a moment will become like 100 yugas. We will not be able to tolerate that. So this is the symptom of that. That's what was being described before, right? So this is their tasting of it, but before was explaining it. Right? That's the difference. It's the same thing, but one is bringing out more what is. This their situation, and the others bringing out their taste. So that's how sometimes you see the same verse maybe in two places, or different verses describing basically the same thing, but one is bringing out one aspect, one's bringing out the other, though the what they're talking about is the same. Like that. Yes. Yes.
And as we see here that gopis have rendered the greatest service to Krishna, but here when he has to go, then nobody cares about their opinion on this. And also,
yes, because it can be, because it's parakeya, because if it's known, then it becomes swakeya.
We somehow see the situation when some managerial decision needs to be taken, and then sometimes the devotees who have rendered the most service, they're not taken, they're just swept aside.
That happens, but Krishna knows. If the individual doesn't know and they sweep aside, it's their loss. Because Krishna, he knows, the devotee who's performed the service, that's not lost. Right? Does that make sense? So the persons who don't see that or that, they become the instrument. You may say that, no, but Krishna is showing something here, teaching something to that devotee. Yes. And therefore that devotee will get that benefit. But the devotees who are the instrument for it, they won't get the benefit. As we see Akura here, he's doing his duty, he's transferring the pastimes, but he will, get the wrath of the gopis. You know what I'm saying? So the whole idea is that just because we're an instrument doesn't mean we don't get some results from that.
But and we also see that sometimes like gopis will just increase their rasa
by
separation. Like the gopis will just increase their rasa by separation.
Yes, yes.
But devotees sometimes immune from service, they break down and they.
That's there, but you see, is then do they at some point surrender to Krishna? Right, because if that increases, then that means that's there, and if not, then it means generally means they wanted a break, and so Krishna gave them the opportunity. You know what I'm saying? Because if everything's going nice and all that, but you want to kind of not be so involved in Krishna consciousness, what's your excuse? You don't have an excuse. All you can say is, I'm attached. I actually want to do something else. I want to be more independent. How will that go down amongst all the devotees? Not so good. Even your friends will make a comment. Because everyone's supposed to, you know, how you say, you know, follow the, you know, what's the standard. But if something goes wrong and this person does this, that person does that, this one said this, that one said that, then you can say, well, because of this, I can't do this anymore. And then others will go, yeah, I understand. It's natural. It's, you know.
And that element that if somebody has to engage their nature in Krishna service.
Then that's there, but then that's, yes. But even it means that is there. And if someone in a leadership position doesn't understand the nature of people and engage people for that nature and don't see the importance of it because they just use the we are not the body Prabhu and just surrender Prabhu mantras, you know, to extreme, then the problem is that if that person gets discouraged in Krishna consciousness, that weakness of that happening then is a fault of that leader. Because that is the duty. Prabhupada's made that very clear. That is the duty. Right? People have to be engaged according to their nature. Someone comes in new, you don't know, you engage them in things until you figure it out. And as you go, you refine that. So that should be there. If it's just a matter of, no, I just, whatever needs to be done, we're just practical here, we don't care for all this, you know, I say varnashram mumbo jumbo. You know, we're not, you know, Indians anyway, so it's not for us. You know, we're Malechas and Yavanas, so, you know. Like that. So we should either be, you know, meat eaters and butchers, or, you know, how you say, whoremongers and, you know, like that, or we should be running a drug cartel, or, you know, completely, how you say, engulfed in snow or something like that. And you know, we should be down in Vegas going for it. You know, because then that's our birthright. Right there. Anything other than that, that's a compromise. So if they've made that much compromise, then why can't they make a little bit more compromise for Krishna? Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is that you have to see what the nature of someone is. It is the science. And if we don't use it, that's not scientific. And then we claim to be practical and logical and up to date and all that when it's not. We're just attached in a non-Vedic, non-pious way. That's all. And we just love to use euphemisms, that's all. Does that make sense? So it has to be. So that credit does, that they don't get credit for that. So you see with time, someone who can't see nature and doesn't engage according to nature, with time they will fail as a leader. It's just guaranteed. But if one, you know, somehow or another they see the need to make that adjustment and see the importance to take into consideration individuals' natures, even if they don't understand varnashram. But they see, okay, this person works good here, doesn't work good there, and therefore they engage them in where they work good. That's then when they start to get the benefit, because now they've figured out how to engage that person. Now they get benefit for that. Right? And then if they understand varnashram, it makes it just so much easier. Right? But that's Daivavarnashram. If they're going to not go for Daivavarnashram, better they don't understand it, but be sensitive to people's, you know, moods and attitudes and like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So at the same time, because despite anything, then people are functioning, right? People are leaving Mayapur because, oh, no facility, no this, no that. You know, they should have visited in the 70s. You ever, anyone been to the boundary wall?
Yeah.
Not, yeah. Imagine 8 people in there. 8? No, 6. Excuse me. Don't want to exaggerate here. That room is 10 feet by 10 feet. Literally 3.3 meters by 3.3 meters. That's where 6 people would stay. Right? And that was the thing. You bathed in the pumps. There were some toilets outside there. There were no mosquito nets, and there were no screens. And you were eating fat rice. Thin dal, plenty of chilies, and, you know, whatever else was around in season, like an eggplant sabji, you know, eggplant mush, or drumstick sabji. You ever tried to eat a drumstick sabji? You know? Yeah. It means everybody puts drumsticks in something. They don't make a sabji out of it. Or if they do, it's one thing on the side. It's more like you just take the others and take that for flavor. But no, this is fat rice, watery thin dal, lots of chili, and a drumstick sabji. And I think it's served with a teaspoon. Not the rice. The sabji. You know what I'm saying? If that became the diet now, guaranteed within a couple of weeks, you would not hardly see anybody here. It means, you know, 2,500 people, they'd still be here, but the others would be gone. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that you want, then you'll do, and then things develop. So it's still, the desire is there. Even if people aren't behaving properly, you still can have the desire to be engaged in Krishna's service, despite all obstacles. And if you do that, Krishna is very pleased. And then, whether you're in a nicer situation or not, you're engaged in Krishna's service. Because the point is not whether the service is nice, the consideration, the recognition, is are you comfortable and situated in devotional service? Are you happy in devotional service? If you are, even if the service you're doing, you can't do it, you're not getting a good result, everyone's harassing, it doesn't matter. If you're happy, what does it matter? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Prabhupada ki. No, there were no potatoes in it. It was just soju.
But I guess you need thin dal to eat such plate of rice, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah,
otherwise
yeah.
Nobody sticks.
Yeah, no, I mean, you could have thicker dal, but it's just, they like the thinner dal, it's just the style. Like that. Yeah. It just depends. Some areas, and they use thicker dal, some use thinner. Like Calcutta, they'll use thicker dal. But the villages, they'll use thinner.
South,
yeah.
Thick that, and then there is
restaurant
which is
yeah.
No
yeah.
That.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well,
sambar
is
dal.
Yeah. Oh, because the other one's dry. It's just in the corner of the plate. Because according to Shastra, you're supposed to eat dal.
Uh-huh.
Like that. So according to Shastra, then they put a little bit on the plate. But it's dry. You know, it means dry, meaning that it's very thick, kind of like the puri dal,
uh-huh.
But not sweet.
Maharaj, we are born rich in ISKCON.
Huh?
We are all born rich in ISKCON.
Yes, yes. Yeah, yeah. What is this, 42-2? Oh, okay, so this one goes here.
The drumstick sabji is existing, Maharaj. You surely know to prepare it.
No, but it's not the only sabji you get.
The only sabji.
Oh, you didn't catch what I was saying. Did everyone else miss
yeah.
Those? Yeah. Okay. Okay, you know fat rice? Okay. Red fat rice? No, okay. So red fat rice.
Fat rice and boiled rice is the same thing.
Yes, but when we say fat rice, it means boiled rice that is very fat. Have you ever seen Aush rice?
No.
Never heard of Aush?
No.
Yeah. So Aush is there. It's a very strong rice, a more powerful rice. The locals eat it because, you know, if you want to do hard work, you need to eat that. So you have a pile of that. Then you have a thin dal. So it would be like rasam with some beans floating around in it. Right? And hot. Right? Then you have a sojana datta sabji. And you'll get how much would be the first serving of sabji if you're serving in South India. That first serving, just to start with, they put all that. That's all you're going to get. You can get more rice and dal. And that's not, you know, just, okay, that meal and the next meal is that. No, they're all, that's the meal. So they might change and you might end up with something else, some eggplant or a couple of potatoes or this or that. But you get that one sabji that much and that's it.
No second service.
No, generally not. Generally not. I once, and it's not just that's the way they like it. Because one time I came late and so there was nothing left. So I sat down and ate with the cooks. Same rice, same dal, and instead of that, they gave a little ball. You know how you know this? You know when you take tamarind and roll it into the balls and roll it in salt and then put it away to age. You know, like the size of the ball that you would put into your sambar, right? That big a ball of potato, mashed potato. But, you know, I guarantee it was, I'm not sure what percentage, but a high percentage of that was chili. And so you didn't eat it, you kind of rubbed your finger on it and just got some on the end of your finger and put that on your tongue, like Andrans do with the chili chutney. Right? You don't know that one. You know that one?
I do.
Yeah, yeah. It means you take red chilies and grind it into a paste.
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah, and then you just stick it there. And already it's hot, so you put that there, and then you just take some, and then you just run your finger, and then like that. That's how. Yeah. So that was real. That was what it is there. So what they have going on now and all that is really good.
Big spoons.
Yeah.
If South Indians come, they come from. They will get shocked because that is like rice only. What subjects we get, it is equivalent to, yes, we don't differentiate what is right, what is so much quantity.
Yeah, yeah.
We say little, still, they serve so much.
No, well, you can't say little, you have to say samanna. That just means like, and you have to get your hands out there.
The spoon size is so much.
Well, that's a dabu, yeah. Because it goes in you want one full dabu or do you want two? So little means one. More means two. So maybe that's your mistake. You're thinking that you'll get part of a dabu. No, that doesn't. Bring your own spoon. When they come, one of these. Yes, that's all part of the all part of the experience. And they'll say, oh, but in the West it's so much better, but it's not. Because here they know how to cook, they just use too much chili. There they don't know how to cook, and they don't use chili.